on this episode of Rebel Spirit Radio.
I think the first step is to realize we're trapped. You know, we think we're free, but we're actually imprisoned, you know, in our own mind. And if you don't realize you're in prison, then there's no way out of the prison, you know? So that's one thing. And then the idea of, you know, to connect with our nature, could connect with ourself, to connect with our creativity. Yeah, that's in a sense the medicine, and that's the way. But we're living in a world, at least in our society in the US, that doesn't really support people speaking their voice. On the contrary, there's like all this censorship and surveillance, and it's dangerous to at certain points speak what your experience is. But that's where, like, so this mind virus that's at the bottom of all of the collective madness and the evil that's being played out, it's contagious. When you hang out with people who are under the spell, you know, it's easy to sort of, like, you know, in a sense, affect you in a way where you fall asleep, and then, you know, you're reinforcing each other's asleepness. You know, that's a collective psychosis. But the converse is true when people start to awaken, when people start to connect with their nature, with their creative nature, with their love, with their compassion.
Welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio, exploring the frontiers of spirituality, consciousness, the esoteric, and humanity's sacred relationship with a living earth. I'm your host, Nick Mather, and I'm excited to welcome Paul Levy back to the podcast to discuss the release of the revised and expanded edition of his book, The Quantum Revelation. Paul delves into the radical discoveries of quantum physics that challenge the notion of an objective reality and align with dreamlike experiences. He relates quantum physics to Tibetan Buddhism and Jungian psychology, emphasizing interconnectedness and the necessity of awakening to our intrinsic creative power to transform our shared reality. Also, please be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. Your support is truly appreciated. Paul Levy is a pioneer in the field of spiritual emergence and has been practicing Tibetan Buddhism for over 35 years and was the coordinator of the Portland chapter of the Padmasambhava Buddhist Center for over 20 years. Paul is the founder of the Awakening in the Dream community in Portland, Oregon. He is the author of several books, including Dispelling Wetiko, Breaking the Curse of Evil, Wetiko, Healing the Mind Virus that Plagues Our World, Undreaming Wetiko, Breaking the Spell of the Nightmare Mind Virus, Awaken Darkness, When Evil Becomes Your Father, The Madness of George W. Bush, A Reflection on Our Collective Psychosis, and the recently revised and expanded The Quantum Revelation, Awakening to the Dreamlike Nature of Reality. Paul, welcome back to Rebel Spirit Radio.
Yeah, hey, I'm so happy to be here with you. Thank you for the invite.
Oh, of course. I always thoroughly enjoy speaking with you, so I'm very much looking forward to this. And as I noted before I hit record, I just finished reading The Quantum Revelation, and so I'm really excited to be able to talk to you about this. So there's a lot of things I want to ask, and I know our time is limited, and I was thinking, you know, where do we start? Because one, I think that we can address a collective psychosis right now, but also I think more to the point, the quantum revelation. And I thought that maybe that would be the place to begin, is to ask you about quantum physics and how that leads us to a picture of a dreamlike nature of reality.
Yeah. Well, for sure. So, you know, I'm no physicist at all, but I began having over 40 years ago these experiences that were physically impossible, that could only happen in dreams. And it, you know, it created real trouble in my life, because from the mainstream point of view, I was seen as having gone insane. But from the point of view inside of my own mind, I was waking up to the true nature of myself and of reality and of all of us, really. And so quantum physics, once I started studying it, I began to recognize, wait a second, this is describing and articulating the very universe, the very dreamlike universe that I had found myself inhabiting. And that was really interesting to me. So that's why, just as a non-physicist for decades, I've been going down the quantum physics rabbit hole. And just in essence, what it is, you know, it came into our world about a century ago. And it came into our minds at that time too. And to say it was a radical discovery is a huge understatement, because what quantum physics discovered was that the universe that classical physicists, Newtonian physicists, pre-quantum physicists were studying didn't even exist. There was no such thing, because these pre-quantum physicists were thinking they were exploring and trying to understand this world that was objective and separate from us, and they were just passive observers. And quantum physics basically came along and discovered, empirically proved again and again, that the act of observation actually influences the universe observed, that there is no such thing as an objective world out there. That's just an idea in our heads. Okay. And when you think about what I'm describing, that quantum physics tapped into, that the act of observing this universe actually influences the universe observed, that's a description of a dream. Because if you, the act of perceiving in the dream, actually the dream is just a reflection of your own mind. And so, in other words, in my book, I point out that quantum physics has made a huge discovery, and we're at the very beginning stages of deciphering it. And that discovery is that it's discovered the dreamlike nature. It's discovered that we are having a collectively shared dream, that we are dreaming up each moment into manifestation. And, you know, and even the quantum physicists, the founding fathers, it was like the floor had gotten pulled out from under them. And they were actually saying, well, you know, we haven't really, like, for example, they would be saying, like, you know, here, so quantum physics has already changed the course of history with all the technologies that's been developed. And they're saying that, oh, that's the low-hanging fruit. We haven't even begun to tap into the real benefit of quantum physics, which will be found within our minds. It'll change our thinking and our way of thinking and what we think about. And the image used, they say if you came across an automobile in a forest and you've never seen an automobile before, and you would turn on the signal or the windshield wiper or the radio, but you really haven't figured out what's the main point, what's this automobile about. The founding fathers of quantum physics are saying, yeah, we have yet to discover what the central idea, what the main point of quantum physics is. And they're actually saying, yeah, we intuitively feel it's going to be so simple that it'll be able to be described on a t-shirt or on a bumper sticker. And when we discover it, we will hit our heads going, how could we have been so blind for so long? So here's someone like me who's coming along saying, oh, well, here's the central point. Quantum physics is not only an expression of the dreamlike nature, but it's pointing at the dreamlike nature. It's revealing the dreamlike nature. It's the physics of the dream. Because when you discover the act of observing actually influences the universe observed, what that means is that the act of observation, each and every moment, as we are perceiving the universe, we are, it's not a passive act. The act of observation is creative. That's the rabbit hole that I go down. And what you discover is that that unlocks the most unimaginably vast creative power that's intrinsic to our nature. But to the extent that we're unconscious of that, the powers that be, you know, the external powers, whatever form we envision them, are more than happy to tap into our own creative genius and turn it against us. And so that's just a little thumbnail sketch of quantum physics, but the implications are monumental. And like I'm saying, we're at the very beginning. It's only, you see, this radical of a discovery, it's only been 100 years. We're barely even beginning to tap into it because the academically, corporately trained physicists are not prepared. This isn't what they signed up for in graduate school, to like to recognize, oh, what quantum physics, it's a living revelation revealing to us that we're dreaming. No, they're not. They haven't been trained. You know, it sort of takes an inner psycho-spiritual, an immense amount of self-reflective work to actually begin to recognize what quantum physics is revealing to us.
Yeah, that was one of the things I wanted to ask you about, was because I know that many of the early founders of this had a abiding interest in Asian spiritualities and philosophies. And you bring Buddhism in quite a bit in here, and there seems to be quite a bit of points of comparison, if not outright, similarities here. And I was curious because, Oppenheimer had his famous quote from the Bhagavad Gita when the A-bomb went off. And I know others said this, but I can't think of very many modern physicists that are doing the same thing.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I point out in my work that, what quantum physicists have tapped into that, that in Buddhism or some of the Eastern sages have tapped into for centuries, that, the Buddha nature, that the Buddha actually tapped into the quantum nature. And that just is, I mean, I make a point that it's very, very clear. And that, interestingly, the Buddha of our age, when the Buddha passed away, he prophesized that an even greater incarnation than himself will soon be born, named Padmasambhava. And Padmasambhava, who's considered the second Buddha and the Buddha of our age, incarnated, and he founded Tibetan Buddhism, and he started this tradition called the Hidden Treasure Tradition, the Theramada Tradition. And I'll get to that in a moment, because I point out that quantum physics is a modern day Therma, modern day hidden treasure. But a lot of people think that Padmasambhava, the founder of Tibetan Buddhism and the creator of the Therma tradition, he was the founder of quantum physics. And, I mean, that's neither here nor there. I mean, it's interesting. But getting back to the Therma, in the because I've been doing Tibetan Buddhist practice for over 40 years, and the lineage that I do practice in, it keeps itself fresh by these hidden treasures continually being rediscovered. And one way to envision these hidden treasures, they're like alarm clocks that are hidden within the multidimensional fabric of the dream that we're sharing, and they're set to go off right at the time that they're needed to help wake us up. They're like keys that open locks. They're like charms that break spells. And it's a real thing. This isn't like some sort of fairy tale. No, scholars study this Therma tradition, and every spiritual tradition, I think, has the notion of that there are like these liberating spiritual treasures that are found, whether it's in the earth or even within our minds at exactly the right moment. And so I'm pointing out that quantum physics, you see, these Therma, they're a dreamed up phenomena. So think about when the community is doing practice together, and if they get a little stale and one-sided and fall asleep, all of a sudden a Therma will be discovered, a hidden treasure. That if, whether it's a blessed object or a practice or a prayer, and all of a sudden, if they then do that practice, they then get back into being in balance. And it's very much like when we get one-sided individually, our unconscious sends us a dream, and the dream will be a symbol. And an interesting quantum physics is a symbolic procedure, but symbols are the language of dreams. And so just like if an individual gets one-sided, they'll encounter a symbol, which if they get in resonance with, will bring them back into balance, back into their center. That's a way of understanding what happens in Therma. And that's what I mean, that quantum physics is, it's like a compensation for the one-sidedness of scientific materialism, which thinks, and very mistakenly, that this world exists objectively. And as soon, and here's, so here's the process. You see, if I think of the world existing objectively, right, and I'm saying this world is a dream, not it's metaphorically like a dream. No, this is a dream. This is nothing other than a dream. And in a dream, if you hold the viewpoint in a night dream that this universe you're inhabiting in the night dream is objective, well, what's going to happen? That dream you're in will absolutely positively give you all the evidence reflecting back confirmation that the dream is objective, separate from you. It'll manifest that way as proof of, confirming your viewpoint. So then you get even more entrenched in your viewpoint of thinking, oh, this world exists objectively. And the more you see that, the more the dream, being a reflection of your own mind, will just reflect back, giving you all the evidence you need to confirm your viewpoint ad infinitum in a self-reinforcing feedback loop whose origin is your own mind, within your own mind. And what I've described, that's to be, in a sense, hypnotizing yourself and casting yourself under a spell. And that's Wetiko. That's the mind virus that I've written three books about. And I point out that quantum physics is the medicine for Wetiko, because quantum physics is showing there is no objective universe. Because if I think there's an objective universe separate from me, then simultaneously I've conjured myself up to be a subject, to be an ego that's in relation to that objective world. But quantum physics comes along and says, oh, there is no objective world. What happened to the subject? What happened to me? I, as a subject, I need an object to be in relationship to in order to be a subject. If there's no object, who am I? You see? So that idea of, or that experience, that phenomenological subjective experience of feeling, oh, I exist as an ego, as a separate self, and our perception that the world exists objectively, they in a mutual way, in a reciprocal way, reinforce each other. One illusion then supports the other illusion in what David Bohm calls an illusion generating illusion. And that's the madness that we've fallen into. And the origin of it is within our own mind. When people hear me talk about a mind virus, this Wetiko mind virus, and they think, oh, that's crazy, that's new agey, that's woo-woo. All that it means, the idea of a mind virus, is that the origin and the solution of our collective madness, because we're in a collective psychosis, is to be found within the psyche. That's a no-brainer. Where else in the world could our collective madness be found? And so here we've dreamed up quantum physics, just like practitioners would dream up a terma in their community. And I'm nothing, I'm just a translator. I'm just pointing out, well, wait a second. I know something about terma. I'm just an ordinary person, and I know a little bit about quantum physics, and I have no doubt whatsoever that quantum physics is a modern day analog to a terma, but it will only bestow its blessing if we recognize what it's revealing, because quantum physics is revealing this universe is a participatory universe. And so we're being invited to recognize the revelation that quantum physics is in order to receive its mind-blowing benefits. Because if you remember, I'm saying the real effect of it is within our minds.
Yeah. Again, I'm in this situation where there are so many things I want to say based on what you just said.
Right.
So, excuse me. What I'll do is I'll just say what's kind of comes first to mind. One was, as you were speaking in terms of the term of text and whatnot, I find it interesting. I had a guest on, I think it was Douglas Grunther, all apologies if I got the name wrong, who he wasn't talking about quantum physics so much, but he did bring it up, and he made the point that he didn't think it was an accident that quantum physics was discovered, developed, I don't know the correct terminology here, at the same time that Freud published his interpretation of dreams. And there seems to be a connection between the quantum physics and the unconscious. And you rely a lot on Jung in the text. And the other thing I would add to that is to move it up a little bit further. It seems to me that it's also maybe not a accident, and I would see this as a kind of a actual physical term of text in a way, is the discovery of the Gnostic Nag Hammadi library in what, 1945, I think it was.
Totally. No, and absolutely. I'm glad you pointed that out, that it's not an accident that quantum physics was, whether we say it was discovered or invented or created, whatever, depends what point of view that we look at it from, that it was discovered at the same time of Freud's, interpretation of dreams, and also with Jung, his whole like depth psychology, where he was realizing the, in his words, the greatest accomplishment of the entire 20th century was the discovery of what he called the reality of the psyche. And he was tracking quantum physics, and he was realizing, oh, quantum physicists are fast coming, they're gonna connect with the reality of the psyche. In other words, the reality of the psyche was, from the psychological point of view, the same thing, that the psyche is the most fundamentally real thing that quantum physicists were discovering. And even in art, all of a sudden art went from this representational art to non-objective. Well, think about it. Quantum physics was discovering there's nothing objective, And so it was like a convergence in all different fields of really the same thing they were tapping into from different angles, Because one of the, one way to really very simply understand quantum physics, it was they were trying to understand what are the building blocks of this physical world, what is the microstructure. And the more they went down in scale, the more they realized something that they didn't find anything at all having to do with matter. They found mind, they found consciousness. That's the dreamlike nature. And what quantum physics does, it dissolves that separation between mind and matter. Okay. And that's what I mean when I'm talking about the dreamlike nature. And this really creates a context for understanding, synchronistic phenomena. But the point is that it's such a radical discovery, and a lot of our species is still suffering from what I call an objective reality hangover, the residue of like we've been entrained for centuries in the collective unconscious to think this world exists objectively. And then by doing that, we create all the evidence, like I was saying, confirming our point of view. But what quantum physics is openly showing us, not only is it unlocking our nature, our creative nature, so it's promoting itself to be a spiritual path in that sense, but it's actually shedding light on who we are, on our nature, that we don't exist in the way we've been imagining we do, if we've been imagining we exist as a separate self. Because as soon as I exist as a separate self, then you're an other and the world is objective, separate from me, and then there's fear. And fear is the superfood for the mind virus, for the Wetiko mind virus, And so it's weird. I just gave like a big talk on quantum physics, and I began talking about love and compassion. And I was commenting, how strange is it to be giving a lecture on physics and to be talking in the same sentence about love and compassion? But how come that is because when you take in what quantum physics is revealing about the nature of the world we live in, our relationship to it, and who we are, it snaps us out of the spell of thinking we exist as a separate self. And we recognize, wait a second, we're interconnected, we're interdependent. And the energetic expression of that realization is love, is compassion. And that is our nature.
Yeah. And again, that's very Buddhist. I mean, it's the, I know it's identified or different terms are used. I think it's a dependent co-arising that everything is interconnected and that means us too. And one of the core teachings of Buddhism is Anatman, which is no self. And it seems to me that it's this idea that there's no permanent abiding separate self from anything else.
Right.
That we are one with everything.
Yeah. And the whole idea is to just to recognize that we don't have to create that. We don't have to make ourselves one with everything. Because the quantum physicists discovered this is a quantum universe on every scale, not just in the micro scale, but in the macro scale too, and everywhere in between on all scales. And what does that mean? Well, quantum universe. There's no separate parts that are interacting. It's all one seamlessly interconnected whole. And, this has to do with like the idea of entanglement or non-locality that in quantum physics they discovered if like, oh yeah, we do something with one, subatomic particle on a different side of the universe automatically faster than the speed of light. Like another, one that's entangled with it, it's like there's instantaneous information, transmission, unmediated and immediate, in zero time, faster than the speed of light. So all of a sudden, physicists were tapping into, wow, this is a non-local universe. And what non-local means is that it doesn't play by the rules of third dimensional space and time. That everything is connected with everything else and then some. And you see, by pointing out, and some of the founding fathers were saying the real fundamental question of science, when you really get down to it, is who am I? And here quantum physics is like flooding light on that. And and going back to the mind virus, the greatest protection against this mind virus is to be in touch with our nature, with our true nature, with who we really are. But what does that even mean? That can be such a cliche, Well, I point out, well, our nature by its very nature is creative. And when you realize your nature to whatever degree you do, you embody and express yourself creatively. And to the extent that you do that, you deepen your realization of your nature in a positive feedback loop that creates light upon light in a world of darkness, you know? And I point out in my work that the real medicine, I mean, there are a lot of ways of describing the medicine. You know, we're in the middle of a collective psychosis. There's incredible evil that's playing out all over the world. And that the real medicine is one way of saying it is to access our creative spirit. And, you know, and that's why, because our nature is to be creative. And if we disassociate from being creative, then we're splitting from our nature. And some people are so unbelievably creative. They're the incredible creative geniuses that they literally will create an experience for themselves feeling they're not creative. And being that this is a dream, they will draw all the evidence confirming how not creative they are without realizing they're doing that as an expression of their incredible divine creativity, but they're using it against themselves. That's the mind virus, okay? And quantum physics, you know, when you see it for what it is, for the revelation that it is, it unlocks your creativity, you know, opens your heart.
Again, several places I would like to go with this.
For sure.
It's always tricky, but it's always wonderful to have the conversations with you. So one of the things that comes to my mind here is that, and I know that we've talked before about this inherent creativity that we have, and others have talked about it as well. And it's something that I agree with. And it's this idea of, you know, that's kind of what it means to say that we are made in the image of God, is that God
Right.
is creator, that we are also creators. And it seems to me that this is the great struggle, and it's not new. I mean, reading the history of, you know, like modern, you know, Western philosophy and some of the Asian philosophies, you know, humanity has felt trapped for a long time, be it in Plato's imagining of us as being prisoners in a cave and only experiencing shadows, to, you know, I always, you know, my go-to is always Henry David Thoreau, you know, the mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation, and we live these lives of quiet desperation because we can't create. And it seems to me that if we have this inherent ability, how is it that people can wake up to that? Because I think there's this sense of, but I'm trapped. You know, good for Thoreau to be able to hang out on his friend's property for a while. You know, how does the average person?
Well, no, I think it's a great question. I think the first step is to realize we're trapped. You know, we think we're free, but we're actually imprisoned, you know, in our own mind. And if you don't realize you're imprisoned, then there's no way out of the prison, you know. So that's one thing. And then the idea of, you know, to connect with our nature, could connect with ourself, to connect with our creativity. Yeah, that's in a sense the medicine, and that's the way. But we're living in a world, at least in our society in the US, that doesn't really support people speaking their voice. On the contrary, there's like all this censorship and surveillance, and it's dangerous to at certain points speak what your experience is. But that's where, like, so this mind virus that's at the bottom of all of the collective madness and the evil that's being played out, it's contagious. When you hang out with people who are under the spell, you know, it's easy to sort of, like, you know, in a sense, affect you in a way where you fall asleep, and then, you know, you're reinforcing each other's asleepness. You know, that's a collective psychosis. But the converse is true when people start to awaken, when people start to connect with their nature, with their creative nature, with their love, with their compassion, because this mind virus turns people into robots, into automatons, into zombies. And think about, like, with AI, you know, and the real shadowy, scary part of that. And what that implies is that, you know, the way to deal with that is to be in touch with your soul, with your heart, with your open heart, with your just your intrinsic kindness. His Holiness Dalai Lama calls it just having the good heart. In Buddhism, it's called the bodhicitta, which is the absolute essential thing you start with when you are a beginning practitioner. And when you become enlightened, it's actually what you get is the bodhicitta, is the good heart, the loving heart, overflowing with love and compassion. So that's can go viral too when you hang out with other people. This is the real spiritual community, the Sangha of the Buddhism, the mystical body of Christ. That's as contagious as the mind virus. When you hang out with people who are really embodying that realization, that's contagious. That affects you in a positive way. And that can go viral, just like COVID went viral, supposedly, the alleged COVID virus. And yeah, so, anyways.
Well, one of the things that I think of here is, kind of going back to this idea of Plato and what you were just saying and his allegory of the cave, is that the prisoner that is kind of leaves the cave, they didn't do it on their own. They had to have someone come and remove the blinders. They had to have someone come and kind of release them. And so it seems as if that having someone outside to help stir up the bodhicitta or whatever you want to have, however you want to say it, that that's kind of necessary.
Well, it makes me think of this incredible dream I had a number of years ago where I was on a very, very tall stage right at the edge. And way down below, there was a guy doing magic tricks. And he, after each one, we would all be oohing and aahing. And then he did one amazing magic trick. And at that point, somebody pushed me off the edge of that stage. And it was like a really high cliff. And I never would have jumped off that stage myself, but I dreamed somebody up to push me off. And as I'm falling, I recognized I was dreaming and had a lucid dream and had an amazing spiritual experience. And then when I woke up, I realized, wow, that was so interesting. I never would have jumped off that stage myself, but I dreamed up somebody in the dream, and the dream is just, all aspects of me to push me off. So in a way, and this is a known thing psychologically, when a person is really in a double bind or like at the, the edge, right at the edge or in a corner and there's no way out, it's a no-win situation. It's not uncommon that that's when there's lucidity. That's when they wake up and have a lucid dream. Similarly, in times of darkness, it's understood that those are the times that revelations manifest. And I'm pointing out that, firsthand, Wetiko mind virus is a revelation, through the dark. But quantum physics is a living revelation. And, and it's something that all of us should keep our eyes and ears open for the revelations that are unfolding in and as and through the world in our daily lives, because to the extent that we actually connect with what it is to be just an actual human being, and with a good heart, with self-reflective awareness, with love, compassion, and connect with other people who are also having the realization of the dreamlike nature, we can literally change the waking dream we're having. And that's evolutionary. And the way to understand that sounds all like, oh, magical thinking. No, this is rigorous, hardcore science. Imagine being in a night dream and say your figure, your dream ego is the name, is the, what it's called. It's who you, the model for who you think you are, but it's just a model for who you are. It's not who you are as the dreamer of the dream if it's a night dream. But say you're in a night dream, you're in your dream ego, and you have lucidity, you're recognizing you're dreaming, you're having a lucid dream. And then imagine some of the other characters in that dream that you're having, who are just your own dream characters, parts of you. Imagine, so I'm invoking the creative imagination. Imagine they also realize they're dreaming and they're having lucidity. And imagine you come together, say if there's two or five or 10 or 100 of you, and you all trip out and contemplate what you're realizing. Oh my God, this universe we're in is a shared waking dream, and it's manifesting in such a shadowy, problematic way because we've been all programmed and conditioned out of fear and lack and scarcity to dream it up that way. But now that we're realizing the nature of this dream universe that we found ourselves in, and that we're actually interconnected and not separate and parts of one another, we can put what I call our sacred power of dreaming together and dream a different dream that's more in alignment with who we're discovering ourselves to be, which is that we're not separate. That's to fully step into our own evolution. And that's what I call to dream ourselves awake. And that's available to us. That's completely freely being offered to us. And that's what this is all about, what's happening in the world. That's revealing it to us. And it's all a question if we recognize what's being revealed. And if we don't recognize it, then we're fated to continue to destroy ourselves. It's really that simple.
Yeah. Well, and it's the way I always describe it is the as within, so without. It seems like what we have to recognize is that everything that we're experiencing out here is a reflection of what's going on the inside. And if we want to change what's going on out here, we have to change what's going on in here.
Right. That's exactly right. And that's a description of a dream. Because think about you're in a
Yeah.
dream at night and you're in the dreamscape. Well, what everything that's happening in that dream is actually, what is a dream? It's a reflection. It's a
Right.
projection that's happening inside of us. And people ask me all the time, oh, how do we deal with the darkness that's playing out in the world? And I point out, well, the best way to deal with the darkness that's playing out in the world is to shed light on the darkness within yourself. And when you actually come to terms with that, then you're in an empowered place to be able to be of help and shed light on the darkness, you know, instead of seeing it as like real and solid and separate and bad and then reacting to it or turning a blind eye toward it or however people react to it. And that just unwittingly feeds the darkness.
We have to recognize again that non-separation, that the darkness is us.
Right. Well, even the word mirror, etymologically, the word mirror, it actually means the holder of the shadow. So when we're seeing somebody and say if we're seeing their shadow and we have a contraction and we're judging, well, you know, they're actually a mirror reflecting back our own parts that we have that we're judging and we haven't fully loved or embraced, you know.
So
And
do you think
Christ, by
there's
the way, just about the mirror thing in the apocryphal text, of course, this got edited out of the Bible, you know, because the apocryphal text, it's completely pointing out Watiko. It calls it the counterfeiting spirit. But one of the things Christ says, and I point out that Watiko was on the editorial board, that's why all the references to Watiko got taken out of the Bible and are just in the apocryphal text. But in the apocryphal text, Christ says, I am a mirror to those that perceive me, you know. So he's openly saying, that's my nature. You know, and if you recognize yourself in me, then you become as I am. That's another quote from the apocryphal texts.
Yeah, and it seems to me that there is currently an image of Jesus that doesn't necessarily reflect that Jesus, but reflects more of kind of the darkness, a Jesus that's not grounded in compassion or care or forgiveness, but a Jesus that seems to be more interested in profit margins, perhaps.
Yeah, well,
And
that's you know, instead of being an icon, that's an idol, that's a false god, you know, and really that's the god, I mean, of whatever, of a lot of the powers that be there have their fingers on the levers of power. That's in a sense their god image, you know.
It just seems like it's a distortion, and but it can act as a mirror if people recognize, well, wait a minute, that's more me than what Christ is supposed to be. So one of the things that I wanted to ask you, and I think this is kind of an important question, and you do address this in the book, and what I want to ask is about a maybe a criticism of this, of, oh, Paul, this is just all, woo stuff. This is all just new age, wild thinking. But you wrote in the book that no, that is not what's happening here. This is not some kind of naive new age ideology, but there's something else here. So I wanted to ask you to address that.
No, totally. And you know, this is what the most genius, like there was a generation of physicists in the early 1900s and historians who study this stuff said, yeah, there was like this genius community of physicists. That was when quantum physics was discovered. And, so these are like the hardest core rigorous scientists, and what they were discovering. I mean, there are a lot of quotes I have where they were like, "Oh my God, I wish I had never become a physicist. I wish I'd become a shoemaker. I wish," because they were so freaked out by what they were realizing. And even Albert Einstein, who was one of the founding fathers of quantum physics, he could never embrace quantum physics because he was still attached to the idea that there was an objective world separate from our consciousness. And but he actually said, and this is a quote, he goes, "Quantum physics is so uncommonly important that it should be everyone's concern." Because it's, we are affected and informed by quantum physics, or our day-to-day lives, just, I mean, so much. It's kind of like it's all throughout our day, but we don't realize, we don't consciously have the realization of what we're tapping into. So I would say, like, I just gave a lecture and I was talking about my book and all of the stuff we're talking about. And unbeknownst to me, somebody asked a question who was a scientific materialist and just obviously didn't get quantum physics. And he was just thinking, "What I'm saying is totally wrong or mistaken, or I'm conflating this or that." And, I tried to be gracious. I didn't want to tell him he didn't know what he was talking about, but he didn't. He had no idea. Like an example, he brought up, like, "Oh, when the Big Bang happened, however many billions of years ago, there was no observer in it." And, quantum physics does something interesting to time, because quantum physics, in the equations, there's no variable for linear time because there's only one moment of time, and that's the moment of observation, the now moment. And in quantum physics, they discovered that the past and the future are holographically unfolded in the present moment. That not only is the past seemingly causing the present to manifest the way it is, but so is the future. It's reaching backwards in time to like actually influence the very present moment in a way that you could think of it in terms of our being attracted to a potential future, And so one quantum physicist actually says time is in deep trouble because, for example, that questioner who is an embodiment of the scientific materialist point of view, I would say he's fallen under the linear time spell, thinking that time is linear and chronological, where quantum physics is saying, no, time is a construct. And Einstein was openly saying this, that time and space are constructs, and that according to quantum physics, the idea of time came along as like this construct, this conception to make sense of these machines called clocks, that that's all that time is, that there's no such thing as time. That, some physicists say, yeah, quantum physicists say time didn't come down from God. No, it was invented by man to try to make sense of our experience. And so, yeah, it's really interesting because even though quantum physics, it's never, it's the most successful theory ever. It's never been proven wrong in one iota. And if to the point where, like Feynman, Richard Feynman, actually, he's quoted as saying, yeah, if a new theory is discovered that contradicts quantum physics, get rid of that theory. It's completely wrong. I mean, that's the level of like of how physicists' minds were being blown by what they were tapped into. It's like getting a magic wand from heaven that solves all these equations and develops all these technologies like lasers and transistors and computers and just on and on, and atomic energy and all that stuff. But if somebody asks, if one of the physicists asks, what does it mean? What is the meaning that this magic talisman, this magical wand from heaven was just freely given to us, and we're developing all of the typical responses, shut up and calculate. Like, in other words, don't question. But some physicists, thankfully, were mystically inclined or metaphysically inclined or philosophically inclined, or just having a certain intelligence where they weren't just like these stenographers, but they were actually wondering, what in the world is going on here that we've just discovered something that is so beyond anything we've conceived of? I mean, it's considered to be, there's no doubt that it is the greatest discovery ever in all of history in the realm of science. I don't know anybody who debates that. The question is, what does it mean? And that's where I'm coming in. And I'm just saying, well, interesting. It's revealing the dreamlike nature, and it's helping us to wake up to who we are, and it's helping us to recognize the nature of this world we live in, and it's helping us to recognize our relationship to that world, and it's accessing our creativity, and it's connecting us with our true nature, and it's showing us like the dream. Gee, how about that?
Yeah. Well, and it also seems that it resolves a lot of at least philosophical problems that people have been, wringing their minds over and their hands over, and there's been much gnashing of teeth about, like, mind-body problem, because consciousness is such a fundamental part of the quantum theory. And would it be fair to say that, one, that consciousness is fundamental? And what I'll add to that is, with the idea of the quantum is, you're kind of going smaller, 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 smaller. And if you find out that most of everything's just empty space anyway. And I'm wondering, is like, well, is it really empty space, or is there consciousness there? And it also seems that it just eradicates that dualism of mind or body, that
Exactly,
it's
exactly. It
both.
brings, like in alchemy, they talk about the sacred marriage, the coincidentia oppositorum, the coincidence of opposites. And that's what quantum physics does. It dissolves the separation, like I was saying, between mind and matter, between mind and body. And that's profound. And like I'll just give you an example of how mind-blowing quantum physics is. Like, so a number of years ago, I was studying art and painting, and I was making a painting, and I put this gray color, and it was clearly gray. And then as the painting unfolded, I put a blue color next to it, and all of a sudden the gray was no longer gray, it was purple, right? And from the quantum physics point of view, it's like, well, what is the objective color? Is it gray or is it purple? And well, when you really, what quantum physics says is, well, the experience of whatever, however you experience that color as gray or purple, the experience is nothing other than experience in your mind. The object isn't inherently gray or purple or any color, but you're having the experience of gray or purple. That's an experience in your mind, in the same way that quantum physicists will use, like, the image of when it rains and there's a rainbow. What is the nature of that rainbow? There is no objective rainbow. No, a rainbow is three factors: water, light, and consciousness. When those three factors come together, we experience a rainbow. What is the nature of that experience of a rainbow? It's an image inside of our mind. There's no objective rainbow. Quantum physics is saying that's the nature of our physical world. We are actually assuming there is an actual physical world out there that's separate from our consciousness and that we're looking at. No, quantum physics is saying the observer is the observed. It's all one quantum system. The act of observing that, whatever that color was, gray or purple, whatever the lens I was looking through it, and whatever, like, so in quantum physics, they'll say, yeah, the how we set up the experiment, the questions we ask, how we interpret the data determines the answer we get back. There's no objective answer. We're participating in conjuring up our experience. If we think that that gray color exists objectively, no. There's no, just like, no, that rainbow doesn't exist objectively. No, this world doesn't exist objectively. That's what the Buddha realized. That's what quantum physicists are tapping into. That's what Jung realized in his idea of the reality of the psyche.
Yeah, well, and it makes sense in the sense that, whenever we are examining something, it's all occurring. And I don't know if the language is appropriate. I think sometimes our language is kind of blocks us. And you talk about language a bit in the book, to say that it's in consciousness, because everything that I'm experiencing is kind of, I'm experiencing it through this consciousness in a sense. And so I don't see how you can separate the examination of anything from subjective consciousness. It doesn't make sense to me.
Well, that's why, in quantum physics, the way the physicists were writing and talking about it, it was like there was a skeleton in the quantum physics closet, and it was consciousness. And it was like consciousness intruded itself into the physics lab, and this isn't what physicists signed up for. They didn't know what to do with it, and they changed their theories. They created new axioms. They stood on their head. They turned themselves into a pretzel, doing everything and anything they could to get rid of consciousness from their physics. And they couldn't, you know? And, you know, so like I'm trying to say, it's an epochal discovery. It's the greatest discovery ever in science and all of human history. And it's offering us the very medicine that can potentially, you know, save us from the myriad world crises that are converging on us that we are unconsciously creating. We're like these sorcerer's apprentices who are conjuring up this magic because we have this magic wand, but we don't know how to use it. And we don't even know we have this magic wand in our possession or that we are the magic wand. And so because we're not awake to our intrinsic creative power, you know, the way I'll talk about it in my books is that the mind virus then, which, you know, just remember in the apocryphal text, the mind virus is described as the counterfeiting spirit. It impersonates us. It'll offer us a false version of ourselves. Oh, you're wounded, you're traumatized. And if you're not awake, you will identify with its limited version of yourself. And then it has you, then it can control you and manipulate you. But, you know, if you're in touch with your nature, then that mind virus has no currency over you at all, you know, and when it manifests, it actually empowers you because it deepens your realization because you see its nature as being empty, you know. So I just want to say if people hear about this mind virus and get scared, no, fear is the superfood. Just remember the mind virus, here's the paradox. There's no such thing as a mind virus. It doesn't exist independently, separate from your own consciousness, and yet it could kill us. You know, that's the paradox. If we just think, oh, there's no such thing as a mind virus, I'll ignore it, great, it'll kill you. And if you think there's a mind virus, oh, then you're making it real and then you're empowering it. You see, there's something being taught to us, you know, about how to deal with what's happening in the world. And the way to understand what's being revealed to us is to expand our consciousness and to recognize the revelation. This is what the mind virus is revealing to us. This is what it's openly, freely revealing to us. And it's revealing to us our nature. It's revealing to us, you know, who we are and our incredible creative intrinsic genius, that to the extent we're unconscious of it, the mind virus then taps into it and turns our own creative genius against us, you know? And one way of understanding this, if somebody came into my office and had a dream, and they shared the dream, and the dream was exactly what's happening in the world right now with like Ukraine and Israel and Trump and Putin and, you know, COVID and all of the nightmares that are happening, you know. And they would say to me, Paul, I had this amazing dream. Like, how would you interpret it? And in essence, I would say to them, well, clearly you're not in touch with your creative power because you've outsourced all of your power. You've given away your own authority, and outside forces, you know, are picking up your own creative power and turning it against you. What the dream is revealing to you is the profound importance of you connecting with your own creative agency, because quantum physics is showing us, unequivocally showing us, that each and every moment we are creating our experience of ourselves and our experience of the world. No one else is doing that. Whatever's happening is happening. How we interpret what's happening, the meaning we place onto the waking inkblot, creates our experience. No one else is doing that to us. We are not a victim. When you have that realization, you connect with your creative agency and power to actually change the dream. And when enough people, you know, the 100th monkey phenomena, have that realization, connect with each other, that's when we can dream ourselves awake. And that's what my whole work is about.
Well, it seems like that's what happens in lucid dreams. You know, when you recognize, for me at least, when I recognize that I'm lucid or that I'm dreaming, it only lasts for a short while because eventually what'll happen is I just kind of wake up, you know, from the sleeping state.
So wait, aren't you having this lucid dream right now?
Oh, I don't know. Heck if
Yeah.
I know. It's all no, I understand the dreamlike nature of things, and the more I experience and read, you know, I can definitely feel the dreamlike nature of things. But it's a bit of a struggle at times to not be tainted by some of the darkness that goes around, and recognizing that, you know, I always come at it from, like, for example, the climate change, the idea that I have been saying for years now is, you know, that as within, so without, that's a reflection of what, that's us, you know, and that if we want to change this, we need to change us. And it sometimes it gets, I guess, maybe a little bit discouraging.
Yeah.
When,
can I say something about that, about the discouragement? Because one of the big dangers in our world today, things are so crazy. You know, there's a collective psychosis going on, a psychic epidemic, and really scary and dangerous. And there's incredible evil that's come out from hiding under the ground or in the corners and is, like, overtly in our face all over the place. And, you know, it's a real danger for people to, you know, feel despair and pessimism and hopelessness, because being like a dream, if you, you know, get fixed in that viewpoint, you're going to then, being a dream, you're going to attract all the evidence confirming your viewpoint. There's that self-reinforcing feedback loop, right? But here, quantum physics is coming to our aid once again, in that it's saying that, well, okay, there are these things that are called elementary particles. They're the microstructure, the building blocks of the physical world. And the way they're conceived of in quantum physics is that they exist in a state of potentiality, of open-ended potentiality, of every and any possible state they could ever exist in. They exist in up until the moment that they're observed. And then one of those possibilities actualizes, and all the others just vaporize into parallel universes. And then the very next moment, the same thing happens, right? Well, what that means is that even if one of those potentialities is highly, ridiculously improbable, and that's a quote of one of these quantum physicists, it could still manifest this very next moment. And what that means is that even the fact that humanity could awaken in this very moment, and there could be a global awakening, or there could be an awakening in the collective unconscious such that we realize, oh my God, we are destroying ourselves. We're enacting collective suicide. We're destroying the biosphere, the life support system of the planet. We're investing the majority of our resources into creating weapons of mass destruction in order to more efficiently kill ourselves. We have been out of our minds. And when enough of us can snap out of that, we realize, oh my God, we can make a different choice. Quantum physics is saying that's completely within the realm of the possible, you know? And if we're not envisioning that, you know, then what in the world are we thinking? And it's very much like, if I could just add one more thing before we close, and that is that it's, I have a feeling like having a recurring dream. Like, oh, we've been here before, and we've been here countless times, millions, billions of times, and we're in this exact situation, and then boom, we blow ourselves up, and then, like, takes another 14 billion years, or however long, and then we've, like, of course, you know, being a dream, in dream time, that's no time at all, and then here we are again. Are we going to get the message? Are we going to recognize the revelation that's being revealed to us, you know? And boom, we blow ourselves up again and again and again. And I'm wondering, is this the time? Is this the recurring? And of course, when you have a recurring dream and you don't get the message, what happens? It recurs again and again in more amplified form until you finally get the message. And so I'm questioning whether, and I'm hoping that this is the dream where we actually get the revelation, get the message of what's being revealed to us, so that we consciously connect with our incredible intrinsic creative power and, you know, not blow ourselves up, but actually have the recognition that we're all in this together, that we're not separate, and, you know, that we can change the dream, that we can dream it different, you know, and that's quantum physics is saying that absolutely is possible. And, you know, so I'm just glad that I remembered to say that, because that can help so many people I know are just overwhelmed in frustration or hopelessness, or there's no future or whatever. And then if you get, you know, fixed in that viewpoint, you become part of the problem. You can't, you know, the idea is to be in service and to cultivate our little flame of consciousness, particularly in times of darkness. That's the most important thing, is to really protect your own light.
And to keep that compassion and love, I think.
Right? Totally.
So I know we're out of time, Paul, but let me ask you really quick, what are you working on next?
Well, I'm halfway through my next book, and it kind of, just kind of surprised me. It just started coming through. I wasn't consciously planning on this. And I think I had mentioned that Jung felt the greatest discovery of the whole century, the 20th century, in psychology was what he called the reality of the psyche. And that's the psychological equivalent to the quantum. And and he basically was meaning that the psyche is is the most fundamentally real thing there is, and that this all is psyche. The psyche isn't just located in our brain, but this universe is not separate from psyche, which is just another way of saying this is a dream. In his work, Jung again and again talked about the dreamlike nature, and that's the medicine. Unless we realize that, like I'm saying, we're doomed. So, that's what I'm working on every day. And I'm excited because then, with the reality of the psyche, the quantum physics, the dreaming, and Watiko, almost like those are the four aspects of this jewel. And really, that's what I'm happy to be offering to people,
Well, I always love your work. It's very, it's, I don't know, none of the words I have are like do it justice. It's more than interesting. It's very mind blowing and it's very thoughtful. And I think it's very helpful. You are offering good medicine.
Well,
So,
thank
all
you
right.
so
Well,
much.
Paul, again, thank you so much for your time. As always, it's a
Totally.
pleasure to
My
speak
pleasure.
with you. Hopefully, we'll speak again when the next book comes out.
Totally. Thank you so much. Okay.
All right, thank
Bye.
you. All right, goodbye. And that's a wrap on episode 187 of Rebel Spirit Radio. Thank you so much for listening or watching if you are part of my YouTube audience. As always, if you enjoyed this episode, please hit that like button if you're watching on YouTube, and don't forget to subscribe to the channel or follow on whatever audio platform you use for listening to podcasts. Right now, I'm nearing 20,000 downloads on the audio platforms, yet I only have 12 followers. One of those is me. It only takes a second to like, follow, or subscribe, and it's totally free, and it really does help. Putting together this podcast is a labor of love, and I do love it. I put a lot of effort and time into each episode, and I hope you can find it in your heart to send a little love my way. With more subscriptions and followers, it's possible I could get some sponsorship and honestly, having some funds come my way to help with equipment, hosting, and other necessary subscriptions would be really helpful. You can also help by joining my Patreon or buying a Super Thanks on YouTube to help support my work. As I always like to say, I'm here in the Front Range now doing missionary work in regards to spirituality, religion, and ecology, consciousness, and psychedelics, and the esoteric, and how all of this can help us heal humanity's sacred relationship with the living earth. So if you feel moved by the rebel spirit, and I sure hope that you do, then please, by all means, help me in my efforts to spread the good news. I'm Nick Mather, and you've been listening to or watching Rebel Spirit Radio. Until next time, may you be at peace, may you flourish in all possible ways, and may you continue to nurture your rebel spirit.